From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. When you talk about historic preservation, you might think about the paint police or musty old buildings that wantonly waste energy. But today, we're here to explore what historic preservation actually is, why people in the Cape Fear region are dedicated to protecting local buildings that face a threat, and how historic preservation fits into the economy. With us today for this exploration are two local experts. Beth Rutledge is a member of Historic Wilmington Foundation's Board of Trustees. She also chairs HWF's History's Future Committee, which aims to connect the young and young at heart who support preservation. Beth Rutledge, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you so much, Rachel. It's great to be here.
Also with us today, Travis Gilbert. He is the manager of the Lower Cape Fear Historical Society and the Latimer House Museum. Travis Gilbert, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. If you have a question about historic preservation or an opinion on how and whether older structures should be preserved, give us a call on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Beth Rutledge, if I don't live in a historic house or work in a historic building, I actually do work in a historic building, but if I didn't,
right.
And the idea of a history lesson makes my eyes glaze over, why should I care about historic preservation? What impact does it have on my life?
If you live in Wilmington, it has a tremendous impact on your life. You may not care about historic preservation as you believe it to be about a musty old building. But do you like to drink craft beer, you personally?
Sure.
Sure. Where do you want to drink it? Do you want to drink it in a strip mall, or would you like to drink it in a beautiful old building with exposed brick?
Right.
Yeah. I think that it really is about so much more than, is it just an old house? I don't like old houses. It's about a way of life. It's about community. It's about viability. It is about diversity and density and wonderful neighborhoods. And we'll get into all of it later, but you should definitely care. And I think if you live in Wilmington, you do care, whether it's overt or a little less so.
Travis Gilbert, what does historic preservation do for the Wilmington area?
I think it's telling that the National Trust for Historic Preservation, in a recent study, concluded that more than 75% of money that heritage tourists bring to these local historic districts stays within that respective community. And heritage tourists, individuals that are coming to an area, a community, to experience its uniqueness and its cultural resources and natural resources, they're not just spending money at the Latimer House Museum. They're spending money to go out to eat, to go to the movies, to go to a concert. So your place of employment might not seem that connected to historic preservation because you don't work in a historic home or a historic property, but you're serving these heritage tourists. You're benefiting from the income that they're bringing to this community.
Do we have a way of tracking the dollars, heritage tourism dollars?
I'm not sure that there is a system in place to track it here in Wilmington.
Are there estimates on what it contributes to the local economy?
That's a great question. I do not have the answer.
I have some numbers from Preservation North Carolina about federal tax credits, but I guess this kind of tourism would be hard to tease out from just tourism in general.
Absolutely.
The North Carolina legislature has done away with a whole host of tax credits, and Gareth Evans of the Bellamy Mansion puts it this way. In 2015, the legislature let the historic preservation tax credit sunset after decades of 98% bipartisan buy-in through renewal votes. It was the only one of 38 cut credits that came back. And he says,
that the tax credit works well because it creates well-paying jobs, returns property to the tax base, saves heritage, saves and revitalizes neighborhoods, a whole host of advantages here. Is that a tough sell these days to policymakers in the face of a legislative philosophy that seems to, that says incentivizing some businesses over others is essentially rigging what should be a market-driven economy?
I have no idea what the North Carolina legislature is thinking right now, really about anything. So I cannot really speak confidently to that. I think that historic tax credits and what Gareth was mentioning about kind of the sunset. So it used to be a 30% tax credit for non-income producing historic structures, and I believe a 20% for income producing property. Now they're both at 15%, and the maximum tax credit, the cap is $150,000 for residential, so you could get a credit of $22,000 back. I don't know if the tax credits are a driver for people who are buying a home and want to fix it up, but they absolutely are incentives for people with income-producing properties, no question. So, are they a boon to the economy? Absolutely, yeah.
How do you, Travis Gilbert, get to play with tax incentives in the context of having a museum through the Lower Cape Fear Historical Society? Is that something that comes into play?
It certainly comes into play. I don't really particularly know the specifics. But I must say, Beth, absolutely, I'm not quite sure what the legislature is doing. It's very important when these new businesses, these income-producing properties, are choosing a location to conduct business, that they're choosing to do so in the historic district, because these breweries, these cafes, these little boutique shops, they're the reason these heritage tourists want to come to Wilmington, park their car, and stroll down Front Street.
And also to, you know, it's why we want to live here.
Absolutely.
Why do we want to live here? We want to live here because of the independent businesses. You know, you look at Castle Street right now, Second Skin Vintage, Just James, Michael Moore, Decades of Decor. These are all independent businesses that are really making it work in older buildings. We want to live here because of what our local business owners are doing, just as much as anyone else.
What is happening with that Castle Street area that a lot of us think of as the sort of arty, antique-y section of downtown Wilmington? There was a story in the Star News this week about the fact that HGTV star Meg Caswell is closing her store. But there's a different reason for that, isn't there?
That's
a growing area.
Yeah, and I don't know Meg, and I don't know why she has chosen not to be there anymore. I can tell you that that building is absolutely fantastic. So,
what is the building?
The building was originally a fire station that opened in 1915. It was the last of the fire station to use horse-drawn fire wagons. So it's just fun fact. But upstairs is rental, and then it's retail on the main floor. It's a really stunning – I mean, when we talk about historic preservation, you can't talk about preservation without talking about reuse. And the reason that we're able to do that here in Wilmington is we have so many great old buildings that are destined to be other things as society calls for it.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, Castle Street, the first thing I think of Castle Street is this kind of millennial generation, this younger generation. Because you're right, it's kind of a hip scene. It's an artsy scene. And you look at the businesses that are thriving in these historic properties.
Secondhand businesses. It's reuse again. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right.
And there's so much love for, I mean, that's called Dry Pond, that area. It was traditionally a mixed African-American and white working class neighborhood. So while it is wonderful to preserve homes that are sitting on 3rd Street and they're beautiful, they're stunning Italianates and stick houses, But it's also important to go into these communities and preserve working class neighborhoods. So when these tourists come to the city seeking to learn our cultural history and heritage, they're getting that well-rounded experience. They can stroll down Third Street and see how an upper-class merchant family lived, but they can also stroll down Castle Street and see Hall's Drugstore, where the individuals of the Dry Pond would come and have a hot dog at lunchtime. They can go in there and enjoy a fine meal at RX. They're getting that well-rounded experience.
And how do tourists know about that? How do they know about Hall's Drugstore?
I think, in the place of RX, restaurant and bar, they're telling that story when you go in there. That's part of the charm and the uniqueness of RX restaurant and bar, that when you go in there, your server, your bartender are going to tell you that this was the cultural center of Dry Pond for most of the 20th century.
And in terms of the houses around there, those smaller, older homes, those are still affordable today. And at a time when small houses are really attractive, this is a great option, especially for first-time homebuyers or people that are downsizing. They're affordable and they're lovely.
Absolutely. Wilmington has such a great collection of bungalows and shotgun homes that are just now turning 75 years old, mm-hmm. and they are now eligible for the Historic Wilmington Foundation's plaque program. And these are the exact homes that are affordable for younger right. generations and individuals that are on the very beginning of their careers.
And we need to hear more about that plaque program and what that is when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're on a historic preservation tour of Wilmington today with two local experts, Travis Gilbert of the Lower Cape Fear Historical Society and Beth Rutledge of the Historic Wilmington Foundation. We're taking your questions on this Wednesday. The phone lines are now open. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. We're breaking up some old myths today about what historic preservation really means, and we're learning about why millennials are jumping on the HP train. With us today to answer your questions, Beth Rutledge. She's a member of Historic Wilmington Foundation's Board of Trustees. She also chairs that organization's History's Future Committee. Travis Gilbert is the manager of the Lower Cape Fear Historical Society and Latimer House Museum. And you can call us with your question on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And just before we went to break, we'd started to touch on the plaque program in the city of Wilmington. Beth Rutledge, can you just sort of tell us what that is for people who've never heard of it?
Absolutely. Historic Wilmington Foundation, which was established in 1966, the website is historicwilmington.org. The plaque program is through them. The plaques recognize houses that, as Travis mentioned, are more than 75 years old, except if you're in a beach community, then it's more than 50 years old. The plaques tell people who are walking by, people who live in the house, usually it's just this tiny little brief history of that home's place in Wilmington. Usually it's who lived there. It's the family who lived there. If it's an architect of note or a builder, it says usually what the person did who had it built. And it really connects people to place. You know, it lets you know that where you're living, this is, didn't just like pop out of nowhere. This is a place with a story and a history.
Do the plaques do anything to the value of the property?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that. Yes, they do. They do. They add a little property boost to home values. The biggest property value boost comes from local historic designations in districts that layer local and national designations. So, you know, there's a designation from the National Register of Historic Places. And in Wilmington, we have something really special because we have 8 historic districts, which is really almost unheard of. I mean, for the population of Wilmington, we have a tremendous amount of historic districts. Downtown, Carolina Heights, Market Street Mansion District, Sunset Park, Masonboro Sound, Brookwood, Carolina Place, and Westbrook Ardmore, I think. But our local districts, Downtown Commercial Historic District, the Theater Historic District with Thalian Hall, Residential Historic District, this just adds a whole other layer. So according to 2007 analysis, this is by a historic preservation officer in Tucson, home values rose 5 to 35% more per decade in more than 20 historic districts nationwide compared with home values in undesignated neighborhoods in the same communities. There's a perceived value that this place is special, and it is.
Do we have any idea if I lived in a historic neighborhood and I'm in a home that certainly is a historic home but doesn't mm-hmm. have a plaque yet, not part of the program?
Right.
How much more is my neighbor's home going to be worth with a plaque?
I have no idea. I don't know. But I can tell you that it would be totally worth it to find out. If you want to get a plaque, it is $300 for members of Historic Wilmington Foundation, $350 for non-members. And the Historic Wilmington Foundation provides kind of like a worksheet, and you can go back and do research about, you know, who has lived in your house and when it was built. And the great thing is all of this information is here at our most, you know, at Carolina Room at the library. And we also can recommend people to do that history for you if it's not your thing. There are really amazing researchers locally who do that. I'm sitting next to one, actually.
Travis Gilbert, she's referring to, of the Lower Cape Fear Historical Society and Latimer House Museum. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about a critical component of southeastern North Carolina's economy, historic preservation and heritage tourism, and how and why younger generations are taking up the mantle. With us to answer your questions on this Wednesday, Beth Rutledge, member of Historic Wilmington Foundation's Board of Trustees, and Travis Gilbert of the Lower Cape Fear Historical Society and Latimer House Museum. You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Speaking of younger generations, Darlene from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
I just wanted to call in because when you all were talking about the Burgoyne Wright House and the Latimer House and the Bellamy Museum, my 12-year-old daughter toured those, of course, I think in the third grade, and was just in awe and wants to go back over and over to those places. But we also have taken up, as she's gotten older, shopping along Castle Street. And we love to shop there, and she loves vintage values, but she loves second skin, vintage. And you may pay more or you may pay less. I would love if RX sold hot dogs at lunch. I remember eating a hot dog at Hall's Drugstore, and I can remember the specific layout of the drugstore at that point 20-some years ago. And I think it's important to share the histories, and there are great books written. I know that you all are familiar with some of the historical fiction and nonfiction around the lives of those areas, and I think it's important to share that it's real, and to value it. And even if it's not what we as parents think that's what is popular or is the norm, you know, that it's the norm to have new and nice and fancy or whatever, that this was new and nice and fancy. And we look at how people have taken care of it over the years, which is back to the plaque system. The plaque system, and I would say, gives value to homes because people care more for them in general.
Darlene,
them more.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Love
That's
hearing that.
We were talking about millennials, but it looks like there's an even younger generation
Absolutely.
That's getting
so
involved
great.
In historic preservation. Thank you so much, Darlene. We also have Joe from Masonboro. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Rachel. Thank you so much. I was quite surprised when I moved in the area, and I'm a big-time history fan, that while riding in our area on bicycle, I found basically a cemetery marker that it was of William Hooper, who was the signer of the Declaration of Independence. And here's something that is the birth of our country. And the only way you find this is if you take a tour during the Azalea Festival. I give talks as an automotive illustrator with the Antique Automobile Club at Cape Fear. And I tell people, I says, in order to go into the future, you have to know your past. And there's so much history in this area, from Revolutionary War to Civil War to all the great things that the town prospered in the future to become Wilmington of today. I just find it fantastic.
Travis Gilbert.
Absolutely. William Hooper just had a birthday. I think it was last week.
I
remember the Facebook post. But I will encourage everyone, every Saturday morning at 10 a.m., we meet at the Latimer House Museum, 126 South 3rd Street, across from the Presbyterian Church. But we do a 1 to 1.5 hour walking tour of the downtown historic district. And we point out where William Hooper's law office was, and has a parking garage. We just kind of narrate the city's history in the colonial era up and through World War II. And I encourage everyone to come out and take that walking tour. It's beautiful, and it's a great condensed way to get a narrative of this city's three centuries of history.
And we'll post a link on our website when we put this up so that people can find those resources and find out what's available. You're listening to Coastline. We're learning about historic preservation today, shaking up some old ideas about it. And in a moment, we're going to talk about why people consider this to be one element of sustainability. But first, we're taking your questions on this Wednesday, and you can call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. We have Aaron from St. Paul, Minnesota, Beth Rutledge. Aaron, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
Hi, Beth.
Hi, Aaron. Aaron is one of my former coworkers.
Okay. You had a question, Erin.
I do. I was wondering if your guests could talk about what's unique about preservation efforts in Wilmington and how those compare with other parts of the country.
Oh, wow. That is a great question. What is unique is that it doesn't seem like you have to sell people here on the value of historic preservation. They really seem to get it. So the part of the country that Erin lives in, it's this constantly this constant push to say to lawmakers and to communities and to city council members and to neighbors that this place matters, these things matter. This history isn't just history; it's part of our present and part of our future. Preservation has to be proactive, and one of the things that has really struck me about Wilmington is that it is proactive. You can excuse me, you can plan ahead to make sure that you're not chaining yourself to a building to keep it from being torn down. There are lots of little stopgaps and things that you can do along the way.
Erin, thank you so much for that call. And just tell us briefly, Beth, you said that she is a former coworker.
Yes.
What did you used to do in Minnesota?
I used to work for Preservation Alliance of Minnesota, and I was an education coordinator, and I led a program called Old Home Certified that was this really just I almost get misty thinking about it. I really, really loved it. It was educating real estate agents about the value of older properties, and it was taught by experts in architecture and geography and other mediums. It was just.
And speaking of that, you are chairing a committee with Historic Wilmington Foundation called History's Future. What is that about? And why does there need to be a committee?
Well, that's a great question. We're right now kind of revamping our committee, and we're trying to engage with younger people. It's really important that younger people feel the connection, and not just that they understand that old buildings or brick streets are important, but they feel it and they celebrate it. We recently had an event at Legacy Architectural Salvage, which is behind Stevens Hardware on Dawson, if nobody has been there yet. We're open Saturdays, 9 to 1, totally volunteer run. And it's amazing, Architectural Salvage. But we did an event there, a sip and shop, in May. And it was so incredible to see the cross-section of people who came. A lot of younger people who didn't even know that Salvage was there. And they were finding, you know, cool pieces for their homes. And I think it's important for younger people to be involved and to care. And I think the thing is that they do care. They just don't know how to be involved.
I want to go back a little bit to the history here of of preservation and some of the things that happened in the 19th century and then 20th century that took out some of the historic gems that this area had, Travis Gilbert. What happened in the 19th century that caused this area to lose some of its great historic structures?
Oh, I think it was in the 19th century, urban fires. Urban fires were a constant problem. Beginning in 1751, the city actually began passing ordinances restricting exceeding the height of your chimneys. And with the embers coming off of the steamboats in the mid-19th century, it caused a lot of urban fires. The poor Presbyterian church has been burned. I think they're on their fourth church now. But the 20th century, I think, is really where the decline of Wilmington occurred.
And many cities across the country. Yeah, with urban renewal. I'm making air quotes. Urban renewal was really just mowing down things that weren't being used, all in the name of, you know, if you get rid of this crappy old whatever, we'll make space for
a parking
else.
Lot.
Right. Exactly.
And yeah. So how has the thinking changed then? So when you're talking about, the biggest push around the country for that sort of thing, was that, would you say, mid-20th century, 1960s, 70s?
Urban renewal was late 50s and 60s. We lost so many. And then, you know, in the 70s was a whole other kind of train wreck, I guess.
When the Atlantic Coastline Railroad, I think, left, that is when Wilmington had to come together and decide how they were going to redefine this community and the downtown area once the railroad left. And, I think that's where the birth of historic preservation occurred. I think maybe now is a great time to talk the difference between the foundation, the society. So the Lower Cape Fear Historical Society was founded in 1956 when this urban renewal and historic preservation were being formed. And that entity did have a committee to establish a revolving fund to purchase homes and to place easements for their historic protection and preservation. And that committee broke off in 1966, and it became the Historic Wilmington Foundation.
Exactly, and the Historic Wilmington Foundation has a revolving fund that allows us to save historic properties by buying them. We put protective easements on them to ensure their continued protection, and we sell them for rehab. So the real
difference is where you are protecting the tangible history, the actual home.
Right.
The society is for educational purposes. We're narrating or providing a narrative on and interpreting what you are so well protecting.
Yeah, we're doing advocacy and outreach as well. So.
And Latimer House recently completed a restoration of sorts. Tell us about that, Travis Gilbert.
Stunning. For anyone who has not been, stunning.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We're very happy with it. Yeah, it began shortly after the holidays. In 1981, there was a fire in the Latimer House Museum, and although they caught it in time before significant damage occurred, there was a tremendous amount of smoke damage. And they allowed a film crew to come in and place wallpaper onto the walls as kind of a Band-Aid to open up the house. Well, we finally got that wallpaper ripped down, and we hired a local artist named Mark Ganser to replicate the original 1852 appearance of the hallway. Zebulon Latimer built his home in a time period where wallpaper was quite expensive. It had to be imported from a large manufacturing center, typically in the north, and it had to be block printed and put together like a jigsaw puzzle. So how Zebulon Latimer afforded the expense of or afforded the elegance of wallpaper without that expense is he would hire a traveling artist to come in and hand stencil and hand paint a pattern onto the wall. And that's exactly what Mark Ganser did. And we are so thankful for one of the first presidents of the organization, Robert Warren. He had protected and protected the stencil. So if it wasn't for Bob Warren, we would really be unsure of what actually it looked like in 1852.
Yeah, it was the actual stencil. It was the actual design.
Isn't that wild? And it looks beautiful. I encourage everyone to come in and see it. It's very emblematic of Italianate Revival architecture, of which the Latimer House is, and of the Victorian era. They were romantics. They were in this romanticized era, and they loved those dark, earthy colors and that natural imagery. So it's a beautiful camellia flowers with laurel wreaths. It's quite stunning, and since it's the first thing you see when you walk in the house, it sets the tone for guests' experience at the Latimer House Museum.
We have an email. Brian says he's lived in and around this area for the past 25 years. He says, "I love all the historic buildings." Is that the break music? We're going to break. So we're going to hear more from Brian in just a moment. He has something, kind of an interesting idea about art and historic preservation. You're listening to Coastline. It is a conversation about historic preservation today. When we come back from this break, you'll have one more opportunity to get your own question in on this Wednesday by calling us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. On today's edition, we're taking a tour of historic preservation, finding out why it's an important part of the state and the regional economy. Here to answer your questions are Travis Gilbert, manager of the Lower Cape Fear Historical Society and the Latimer House Museum, and Beth Rutledge. She is a member of the Board of Trustees for Historic Wilmington Foundation. She also chairs the History's Future Committee, and they're answering your questions on this Wednesday. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. Going back to Brian's email, he says he's lived in and around this area for the past 25 years, loves the historic buildings and the rich history of the city. He says, "I would love to see the addition of some contemporary aspects to our historical district. Street art would be a great place to start. I think it would be a great way to highlight the vibrant local art scene that we have. There are plenty of walls that could use a little love. The parking lot on the corner of 2nd and Princess comes to mind. Speaking of the Castle Street scene, there is a studio and gallery space named Anvil and Ink that is owned by the nationally recognized muralist Brian Leaf Stacy. He, along with many others, could bring some color and life to downtown without tarnishing any of the rich history we have, highlighting it instead." Thanks for that email, Brian. Is there a way to do both? Would some historic preservationists feel that that was tarnishing the history?
I think that, being a purist is not the most productive way to get historic preservation done. I couldn't agree more. What I'm thinking about are the medians between 3rd Street, 5th Avenue, and Market Street. They were specifically designed in the late 19th century for works of art, for fountains and sculpture and statues, and they still exist. And I wouldn't see any problem with putting street art in those medians which were designed for that purpose. It's a shame that so much of that street art has been lost to history.
Agreed. And I also think that it's it really speaks to what Wilmington offers by his email saying that there's artists who live here. This is a really inspiring, really beautiful place. I'd love to see street art right alongside historic.
When many people think about historic buildings, they think about, you know, ill-fitting windows that let in all the cold air or the hot air, you know, big energy consumers. Beth Rutledge, how is that true? Is that an issue, first of all? And secondly, how would one convert some kind of old building into something that might be a little more sustainable and energy efficient? I mean, is that something you have to give up if you get an old house?
Oh, no. And if you live in an old house, congratulations. You are smart and you are working with some really great materials. I'm such a huge proponent of old windows, which were made to repair, not replace. How energy efficient is it to have an aluminum or vinyl window that breaks and gets thrown into a landfill? How is that energy efficient? Old windows have this great mortise and tenon joinery that it's so their windows are installed kind of vertically. And this, the wood, it, you know, shrinks and contracts within its frame, which is great when we live in a damp place like we do. Windows that fit well and are installed properly, old wood windows, are not energy inefficient. And I think this is just like such a it's a marketing ploy by people who want to sell new windows. if you are lucky enough to have old windows, you can work with them. And actually, Historic Wilmington Foundation has had a couple of windows workshops at Salvage, and we'll continue to do that.
Travis Gilbert.
Absolutely. You know, Wilmington is really well known for its vented friezes. You go around town in commercial buildings and residential buildings. They have vents around the top of the home. And it allows all these homes, the Latimer House included, to breathe. They would open up the windows on the first floor, or if they were wealthy enough, the English half basement. And then through convection, the hot air would just be pushed up into the ceiling, into the roof, and out.
Like the cupola of, like at the City Club or Bergwin Wright.
Absolutely, the Belvedere's, yeah. and the vent, and it pushes that hot air out. So on a good day, you can stand at the top of the staircase at the Latimer House, and I know Gareth would agree at the Bellamy House, and you can actually feel, you can still feel the hot air being pushed up and escaping out through the dormer windows and whatnot. So all these homes breathe. Mm-hmm. They were built in a time period without air conditioning. They were built in a time period where we wanted energy efficiency,
right.
Just because it was the demand of the day. And the pocket doors, the Latimer House, all of our parlors are separated with pocket doors. So on a cold winter's day, they would shut those pocket doors. They'd actually have a rod up there, and they would close a curtain, and it would insulate that one room. And we can do that to this day. How much more energy efficient you get?
And also sometimes older houses were built, oriented on a lot to maximize, well, is it going to be really sunny here? Do I want to stay cooler? Now houses are built to suit the owner when they're built new. Before, they were often built to suit the land and how it should be oriented.
Well, if we're talking about sustainability, there's also this tiny house movement. You know, people create these structures that are so efficient. They can live in the tiniest spaces. And Beth Rutledge, you are just, if,
oh my gosh,
you know, I'm going to explode against the wall if looks could kill.
I know. I literally yell at the TV when HGTV has the people on who are saying, like, we want to have experiences, not mortgages. Oh, really? Yeah, because we all love having mortgages. That's super fun. We don't want to travel. We just we love, you know, having a mortgage. The thing about a tiny house is you think that you're being sustainable because you're living small. Go live in a 600-square-foot apartment that was built in the 1920s. You've got all this embodied energy. You're not spending anything new to build it. Okay, it's built with old-growth timber, sturdy, beautiful, gorgeous, hardwood floors. You are taking up, your carbon footprint is smaller than if you build all of this little space where you're usually like, you know, living on your parents' land, or you're like, no, we're going to put it on the back of our truck and we're going to drive it to Austin. Like, you're using someone else to get what you want. But ultimately, what happens when you decide that you're tired of your tiny house? What are you going to do with it? Where's it going to go?
I'm going to sell it.
Right. Okay. So So instead of spending the money on something that is ultimately going to go, very likely going to go into a landfill, go live in a small space and take advantage of that embodied energy and the resources that are already there. Everyone wants them anyway. They go get their tiny house and they're like, we want hardwood floors. Well, go live somewhere with hardwood floors that's already been built.
Can you talk a little bit about construction and demolition debris and what that contributes to landfills?
Yes. So according to the EPA, which as of now still exists, 534 million tons of construction and demolition were generated in the United States in 2014, 534 million tons. Okay, that's just bananas. Demo represents more than 90% of C&D debris generation. I mean, is that staggering?
That's very sad.
Yeah, construction itself accounts for less than 10%. But we don't need to demolish these things. And actually, a lot of millennials are really leading the way in making sure that we're demoing less. Millennials are the largest generational home buyer group right now. 35% of home buyers are millennials. So according to NAR, National Association of Realtors, these home buyers are looking for smaller spaces. Why? Because we can afford them, because they're waiting to have children usually. But small spaces also appeal to people who are downsizing. But millennials want things with character. And where do you find properties
Absolutely.
With character? Yeah, older homes. They love old houses.
I think it's the drive for millennials in historic preservation, I think, is a backlash of two things. It's this throwaway culture that millennials have been raised in. And I think, personally, it's a little bit of a backlash against globalization that we have been raised in.
What do you mean by that, Travis?
I think millennials want to live in historic homes and historic communities because they're unique. They have character. They're very different. You're not going to find a Latimer House ever again on this earth in your travels, nor are you going to find a community just like Wilmington or your own personal coffee shop that you go to every morning.
And
it's that uniqueness.
Yes. And I think we really are clamoring for that. And I think if you kind of look at like, all right, so we live in a world where you can pretty much get anything you want in 1 or 2 days, you know, if you order it online. But then look at the popularity of something like Pinterest, where a lot of people are doing it themselves and they really value that handmade, homemade, craft made. The Etsy, you know, it's a DIY paradise. We want things with texture and uniqueness and things that are really special. And I think old houses really are. And a community that embraces things that are old, like Wilmington, is just
So what do you think then about someone who would buy a historic home and say, oh, I love the way it looks outside and I love the fact that it's got hardwood floors and old growth timber, but I really hate that the kitchen is so separate from the rest of the living area, so I'm going to knock out some walls. Is that suddenly no longer historic preservation, or is it?
I can tell you what my personal opinion is. I think if you love an old house to live in it, you don't have to live in it the way that somebody lived in it 100 years ago. You know, you can live in it your way. I don't think that homes should be, you know, a shrine to something that once was. I think you should live in it and enjoy it as you see fit. What
what frustrates me is if you, you know, like Property Brothers, they go in and they knock out all the walls. Well, what's the point of that? That's just silly. If you want just
You're talking about a show on HGTV.
Oh, yes. Sorry, for those of you who don't know. That's right. But
it's a public radio audience. So
right. But I think that there's a young couple who own the Nora Allen Group, and it's Josh and Adrian. I think that's Josh and Adrian Hodges, and they're doing great work on the north side, and they're buying old houses, and they're rehabbing them, and they're doing this beautiful mix of old and new. So you know, you may have like, you know, some stainless steel in the kitchen and maybe a kitchen that's open to the living room. But you also have the hardwood floors and corbels, and they just do a beautiful mix of old and new.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're learning about historic preservation in southeastern North Carolina. And we have Clark from downtown Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hey, it's Clark. How are y'all?
Good, thanks. How are you, Clark?
Fine. I'm an architect, and I've done quite a bit of rehab, and mostly commercial in the downtown. And I just had a couple comments about why I feel like that's the case, that these old properties are rehabbed. And you touched on it earlier, is the embodied materials that are already there. It's extremely economical and environmentally friendly to reuse these old materials. Another important aspect of doing that is the codes. North Carolina has been very progressive in their building codes, and they have rewritten certain codes to make it easier to reuse these old buildings. Mixing the uses of commercial and residential in buildings can be difficult, but in older structures, there's the rehabilitation code, which allows you some flexibility in how these things are designed.
Clark.
And that, I think that's an important thing to point out.
Yes. Thank you so much for those observations. I want to get to this idea of the bridge proposal, now called, it was once upon a time called Cape Fear Skyway. It's now called Cape Fear Crossing. And this is something that the North Carolina Department of Transportation is looking at, planning for another pathway over the river between New Hanover and Brunswick counties. And just about everyone would agree it's something that is desperately needed, especially as this area continues to grow. What are your concerns about Cape Fear Crossing, Travis Gilbert?
I'm concerned that there would even be a recommendation, right, that even it would be on the table to place that bridge into the historical district. On the south side, where it would be placed in areas such as Queen Street, Wooster Street, and even further down in Sunset Park, again, these are bungalows that tell a unique story about Wilmington's working classes and the individuals that worked at the shipyards and whatnot. And if these homes are turning now 75 years old, so they can be interpreted with a plaque from the foundation. And the idea that they would even put that on the table, that these bungalows are less deserving
exactly.
than a bridge,
right.
Is incredibly frustrating. And I was so warm to see the backlash from this community immediately mm-hmm. after that was put on the table. The residents of downtown Wilmington and historic preservation stakeholders in this area
right.
really put a firm fist down and said, absolutely not.
The business community, too, pretty much came out with one voice on that subject. But this is one of many proposals, right?
I
mean, we're not looking at a real prospect at this point of that bridge landing in downtown Wilmington.
Of course, yeah. But that's the frustrating part. Even though we are at the proposal stage, they have a culture, the Department of Transportation and these stakeholders are operating in a culture that they think that that is a possibility, that it could eventually be there. Thus, it is a proposal.
And it's just insane that we would drop a bridge in the middle of downtown, not only where people live and work, but where people expressly come here to spend their tourist dollars. The Riverwalk and
Yeah.
And that will have to be the last word. That's this edition of Coastline. Beth Rutledge, Travis Gilbert, thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you so very much.
Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. Today's show was engineered by Caleb Covington. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org. Get the podcast or find it on the WHQR app. You can also tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 3. Join us for Coastline live Wednesdays and Thursdays at noon here on HQR News 91.3 FM. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. Line.